This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. Ira Flatow's away. The Oscars are this Sunday, and one of the nominees is Julianne Moore. She's up for Best Actress for her role in the film Still Alice. In the movie, she plays a Columbia University professor grappling with early-onset Alzheimer's. Here she describes what it's like to live with the disease.
It's not always the same. You know, I have good days, bad days, and on my good days, I can, you know, almost pass for a normal person. But on my bad days, I feel like I can't find myself.
While her diagnosis in the film is rare, in one way she represents the typical Alzheimer's patient. She's a woman. According to the Alzheimer's Association, 1 in 6 women over the age of 65 are at risk for developing Alzheimer's. Men in the same age range have a 1 in 11 chance of developing the disease. Currently, 2/3 of Americans with Alzheimer's are women. Why do so many more women have Alzheimer's than men? Can it all be chalked up to a longer life expectancy? To parse out some of this recent research on why women may be more likely to have the disease, I'm joined by Michael Gracious. He's medical director of the Stanford Center for Memory Disorders at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. Michael, welcome to our program.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Also, Roberta Diaz-Brinton is here. She's professor of pharmacology and neurology and the R. Pete Vanderveen Chair in Therapeutic Discovery and Development at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
If you've got questions, 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK. You can always tweet us at SciFry. So, Dr. Brinton, let's get to that first question first. Any truth to the idea that more women have Alzheimer's simply because they live longer than men?
It is true that women live on average around 4 to 5 years longer than men, but that probably doesn't explain the fact that women constitute 2/3 of all persons with Alzheimer's disease. It is more likely the way that they age that puts them at risk, not the 4 years longer that they live.
When you say the way that they age, tell us more.
Women undergo a transition in their life called the menopause and the perimenopause, which precedes it. It's a bit like a transition like the puberty. We all go through puberty and we go in one way and we come out another. And 90% of us go into puberty and come out and we're just fine. And then there's the 10% of people who develop in males, typically it's schizophrenia, and in females, it can be depression. And the perimenopause is another transition for the brain that women experience uniquely. And that transition, our work has shown that that transition is actually a neurological transition. It's a transition in the ability of the brain to generate sufficient energy to keep all those systems working well.
So you're saying women's brains really age differently than men's brains because of this phenomenon?
Yes, they do. And most women will transition through the perimenopause and the menopause quite well. And then there will be a proportion of women who will begin to experience neurological symptoms that are seemingly unrelated to the kind of reproductive change that's happening. And those neurological symptoms can manifest themselves as decline in cognitive function, particularly short-term memory function. It can manifest by insomnia, by depression, changes in affect. And those kinds of symptoms, neurological symptoms, we know begin to be a risk factor for developing Alzheimer's disease, particularly if there are more than one of them and that they don't resolve with the cessation of the reproductive years and menopause.
So in part, you're looking at whether or not there's a connection between a lack of estrogen during and after menopause and development of Alzheimer's.
Yes, a lack of estrogen because estrogen, I call it the queen of Darwin. Estrogen has left nothing to chance in the female brain. And part of what estrogen does is regulate the ability, it promotes the ability of the brain to generate energy. Literally from the taking up of glucose into the brain to converting that glucose into ATP or energy. So when there is a decline in estrogen, there's also a change in the brain that now manifests itself again as a decline in its ability to utilize glucose as its primary fuel, which it's supposed to be. And now there's a switch. There's a switch to an alternative fuel. Again, it's not all or nothing. It's about 20% switch from a highly efficient fuel, glucose, to an alternative fuel, ketone bodies. It looks like the brain is becoming a little diabetic. It looks like the brain is starving.
Every woman goes through menopause. Not every woman develops Alzheimer's, obviously. Why might certain women develop the disease versus others?
There are a couple of potential reasons. One is if they've had a mother with Alzheimer's disease. Our mitochondrial DNA, so there are two repositories of DNA in the cell. There's the one that we all know about is in the nucleus, and then there's another bit of DNA in the mitochondria, and we receive that mitochondria only from our mother. So if our mother had Alzheimer's disease, we are at greater risk because that mitochondrial DNA is only inherited from the mother. So that is actually a risk factor for both women and men. And the other is that there is likely kind of genetic differences in the nuclear DNA that encodes and is regulated by estrogen, that encodes all the pieces for this energetic system in the brain.
We're talking with Roberta Diaz-Brinton, who studies estrogen and Alzheimer's disease. And I want to turn next to Michael Gracious about some of your work. And if you have questions, by the way, 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK as we talk about women and Alzheimer's. Dr. Gracious, you looked at a gene associated with Alzheimer's that both women and men have. What gene is this?
Right, so the gene's called APOE, and it comes in three different sort of flavors or variants, APOE2, APOE3, and APOE4. And most people have two copies of the APOE3 gene, but it's the APOE4 gene that confers this increased risk for Alzheimer's disease.
So under what circumstances does this gene have a different impact on women than men?
Right. So this has been a question. It's actually been in the literature since about 1997. There was a really large meta-analysis of genetic studies. It was published in JAMA, which is among our most reputable journals. And for some reason, it kind of got buried. But the finding was that women that carried one copy of this risk gene, this APOE4 gene, bumped up their risk of developing Alzheimer's about fourfold. And men in this study with one copy of the APOE4 gene really didn't bump their risk up at all compared to men with the neutral gene. So there was this big interaction between APOE4 and sex that was shown in 1997 and then, with some rare exceptions, kind of eclipsed or lost to the literature for unclear reasons.
So what could account for this? I mean, what do you think this might be?
Well, you know, at first I wasn't convinced that this was actually the case. I mean, like I said, it was sort of mysterious that it hadn't been picked up on. I happened on this paper about 10 or 12 years after it came out. I'd already been seeing patients for, 10 or 12 years and never thought about a sex-based difference in APOE4 risk. So to convince ourselves of this, we've done a few studies examining this interaction between APOE4 and sex. And I think the most compelling one that we've done thus far is to follow healthy older controls, so people without any memory trouble. This is a big publicly available database that we were able to explore. There are about 5,000 subjects that were followed for about 4 years, and we could separate them by sex and also by their APOE4 status. And there we found that men with just one copy of the APOE4 gene, again, really don't have an increased risk for conversion to mild cognitive impairment or to Alzheimer's disease compared to men without the APOE4 gene. But in women, even with one copy, their risk for converting from healthy aging to a memory impairment state was about 1.8-fold, almost 2-fold increased risk. So this sort of convinced us that this is a real finding, obviously some important biology behind this that we need to explore further. Certainly related to estrogen, it turns out that this APOE gene, this risk gene for Alzheimer's, has what's called an estrogen response element on the sort of front end of it. And so that we think estrogen controls at some level the expression of this gene. And Dr. Brinton's group has done some nice work in this particular domain. So it may be that at menopause, as estrogen levels decline, there are changes in the expression of this APOE4 gene.
Dr. Brinton, could you pick up on that a little bit?
Well, thank you, Michael and John. So that the APOE is a protein that transports cholesterol in the brain. It also transports beta amyloid. And it's not a particularly good transporter. Probably the best transporter is APOE2, and APOE3 is pretty good, but APOE4 kind of doesn't do a very good job. And now all of a sudden, we have a decline in the ability to transport cholesterol, and the brain has to make its own cholesterol. It doesn't transport it from the periphery. So here we have the transporter, if you will, almost like the slowdown in the LA ports. It's a good analogy because that's essentially an APOE4 effect. It works, but it's kind of slow and sluggish. Now what we have is kind of this buildup of cholesterol. We're not able to renew that source, and we're not able to make the steroids in the brain because cholesterol has to be transported across the plasma membrane into the mitochondria, where cholesterol then is the mother of all steroids. So now, if you remove those steroids from the ovary, the brain is actually kind of very steroid depleted and has a deficiency. That's one hypothesis. The other is that it's not clearing beta amyloid very well. And again, estrogen regulates several of the proteins in the brain that clear beta amyloid out of the brain. Again, so it's almost like the 1-2 hit, where you can go through the perimenopause and the menopause and everything's fine, but now you have this increased kind of burden of dysfunction, and that oftentimes is the tipping point.
Hmm. Let's get to some questions from listeners. Julia is calling from San Francisco. Hello, Julia. You're on Science Friday.
Hi. How are you?
Doing well. What's on your mind?
My question is, if a woman's hormonal changes put her at risk, does the fact that she's had children or not had children have any impact on her risk factors?
It's a great question. Dr. Brinton?
So there is some interesting literature on that. And there was a recent study that came out that showed that women who breastfed their infants actually had a reduced risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. There are other studies that show that, you know, women with many pregnancies are at greater risk. The real issue, I think the field has not yet completely understood the role of pregnancy. I will tell you, though, that pregnancy turns out to be a good thing for the moms. We're developing a therapeutic for early stage Alzheimer's disease that's a regenerative therapeutic based on this molecule that's made by both men and women, but made in great abundance by pregnant women. It's allopregnanolone, and it promotes the regeneration of the brain, the generation of new neurons, and the reduction in Alzheimer's pathology. So it's a fertile field.
I'm John Dankosky. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. Luann has a question. She's also calling from San Francisco. Hi, Luann. What's your question?
Hi, how are you? Love the show, and I love both of your gifts. I just was wondering, in terms of a strategy for women postmenopause, who are obviously at greatest risk, if they have the APOE4 gene, wouldn't it be reasonable to consider placing her on a supervised estrogen replacement therapy as a preventative for Alzheimer's?
Thank you very much for the question, because it's something we wanted to get to. Michael Gracious, I'll ask you that first about hormone therapy as we start to talk more about estrogen and the possibilities here.
Yeah, so this is a very controversial and complex area. And if you followed the literature in the lay press, you know that hormone replacement therapy, the recommendations on that have sort of gone back and forth over the last decade or so. I think Luann's question is actually right on the money, and it's one that hasn't been explored closely enough. So most of the big hormone replacement studies, in particular the Women's Health Initiative and the memory version of that called WIMS, or the Women's Health Initiative Memory Study, looked at hormone replacement and asked whether this would stave off dementia. In fact, in the WIMS study, there was an increased risk of dementia in women that were on estrogen and progesterone compared to placebo. So our current recommendation is that we don't recommend hormone replacement therapy for memory loss or cognitive trouble. But back to Luann's question, it really hasn't been looked at closely. It could well be that E4 carriers may be more likely to benefit from estrogen replacement therapy. The other big controversial issue there is that the WIMS study looked at estrogen and hormone replacement therapy after age 65. The mean age of menopause is around 50 or 51, and there's a reasonable hypothesis that maybe we're kind of missing the window by starting it later, and so people are now studying the effects of earlier replacement. But that issue of does hormone replacement therapy work differently, better or worse, in E4 carriers or non-carriers is a big one and needs to get asked and answered.
Dr. Brinton, a quick thought on this?
A quick thought is that that is our next big area of investigation, and we're very excited to get started. We've already started conducting analyses with colleague Dr. Lisa Mosconi at NYU, examining the effects of this genotype on glucose metabolism in the brain and the development of beta amyloid. So we are definitely on it, and we are racing forward.
Just very, very quickly, do you think there's a need to do more studies of women and men differently when it comes to Alzheimer's research?
Absolutely. I think that's a great point, John, that men and women do age differently. And interestingly, when you look at the risk for developing Alzheimer's disease, men have a bit of an increased risk early, around age 65 or so, and more than women. But then women take over the risk in their 70s.
Roberta Diaz-Brinton is a professor of pharmacology and neurology and R. Pete Van Deveen Chair in Therapeutic Discovery and Development at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, John.
Thanks also to Michael Gracious, who's medical director of the Stanford Center for Memory Disorders at Stanford University in Palo Alto, California. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for having me, John. Thanks for taking on the topic.